Good morning. Another lovely day to practice together. We have a little bit more than 24 hours to continue this constant practice, a precious chance to give all of ourselves, something that can be difficult to do in our busy workaday family life. So we have set aside this 4 days. In a sense, it's an artificial environment, but it's very beautifully done. Bit modern Japanese style. But this is an opportunity for you to really see for yourself with your own mind and body, what is this practice? How does it really work? Tomorrow, we will all be headed back to the world, so tomorrow, in the final Dharma talk, we will take up that matter. How to take this practice that we have done for the last 4 days back to the world, so to speak. But now, today, we are in the depths of the practice. No need to think about tomorrow, next week. It will take care of itself. For now, I urge you to continue to use this precious time, this precious opportunity to give all of yourself to the practice so you can confirm, clearly realize for yourself what these words, these records, these Zen records are really about. Take some time, perhaps till the end of the retreat, perhaps for another week, and consider well, is this practice what you need to do? If it is, you have what you need to bring it to completion. Practically speaking, if we are not living a wholesome life, a healthy life, it's difficult, if not impossible, to truly practice. If we are sitting on the cushion trying to get enlightened and then we go out and we lie and we cheat and we steal, the practice is not going to go well. It's not something that we just do on the cushion. This cushion is a precious place to practice, but if it stops here, useless. It's less than useless. It becomes an escape. The practice must naturally find itself in the world as well. In a sense, that is the real dojo, the real place of practice. As I said yesterday, this is the easy part. So, if you find that this practice is what you must do, maybe take some days, maybe heal from the retreat, let those painful knees get better, and then see, is this what you need to do? We don't need to torture ourselves, but is the genuine Zen path your path? There are other ways. But if you find that this is the way you must go. See that you are living a wholesome, healthy life. It's not just something on the cushion, as important as this practice is. It has got to be alive in the world, in our daily life, in the decisions that we make, the compromises we must make. Huh? A simple example. We sit almost silent for several days. When the retreat is over, interesting, some people find it difficult to speak again because they've sat so long and so deep in silence that they don't really know what to say. Other people, as soon as the silence is over, it's like they have to empty out all that stuff that they held inside them for 4 days. Well, this is not noble speech. When we speak from out of here. Words can be used, silence as well, but words can be used to express and manifest this truth. There's probably no religious tradition greater than Zen, more, in a sense, matured than the Zen tradition, in not only realizing the importance of what is before words, prior to words, without relying on words and letters, as it says. And yet at the same time, there is no more developed literary and poetic religious tradition. I dare you to find one that is more profound and developed than this tradition that bases itself, at least in terms of a formula, on not relying on words and letters. Some pretty heavy words and letters, aren't they? Huh? But out of that developed an incredible, yes, artistic as well, but also literary and poetic tradition to give expression to it. Words can be used to reveal. They can also be used to conceal. We all know that. So, again, a simple example. Retreat is over. You now have a chance to speak with your Dharma friends, with your family, with your workmates. Is the practice continuing? Or is this now an excuse to start just spurting out your opinions and your self-centered ideas again, right? No. Noble speech itself naturally comes out of this, as the silence does. So please be aware of your thoughts, your speech, and your actions in daily life. It is all a part of this living practice. For a while, it usually doesn't work so well. Sitting is one thing and that other stuff is another thing, and it's very difficult to see them as one. Well, the more you sit through, the clearer it becomes. The clearer it becomes, the more you want to sit, and it becomes a kind of a synergy. The sitting reveals itself in our daily life, and our daily life reveals the precious value of sitting. They work in harmony eventually. It can take some time. It can take some time. If we get very good at sitting, it's very easy for this to become an escape. That's not what it's for. That's not what it's for. To repeat, if you find that this is your path, you have everything you need. Use it well on the cushion and in your daily life. in your thought, in your speech, and in your action. Then I assure you, it will take some time, but it will go well. The struggles, the conflicts that you encounter, you realize, are a way of deepening your practice. It's showing you where you need to work. Michael Mikhail S. asked a question yesterday about if you are without self, if you are awakened, in effect, how do you go about your everyday life? Do you have thoughts? Do you have confusion? Do you, well, it's important to return to that, to see awakening. In other words, being without self is much, much more than that, and much, much less. If we use our self, ego, self standard, it's very difficult to understand. Huh? When you're enlightened, I guess you don't have thoughts. Well, I guess you have thoughts, but they're enlightened thoughts. But it doesn't make much sense. Huh? Because you're using the benchmark, the standard of the ego self. I have this self-identity here, now there's this enlightened identity, and I guess it's a bigger one or something like that, or whatever. It's it's like empty and full. Mental masturbation. What do you get when you awaken? You don't get a thing. You stop needing to get things. That's what it is, you see? It's that disease come to its own end. You stop needing to get something. You realize that the whole universe is at your feet. What could you possibly need? You don't get one thing when you get enlightened. At most, we can say you lose one thing. You lose the separation, the delusive separation between you and the other, you and the world, you and who you really are. That's all. And it's a delusion, so the better, the sooner you let go of it, the better. That's the only thing that happens. You don't become another person. I stopped being Jeff, now I'm a Buddha. Well, I'm Jeff, that's just fine. But being without self, being without self, there's nothing to be, you see? There's nothing you need to be. For the ego self, well, I suppose it's really impossible to conceive or to imagine that, because its whole life is made up of seeking this or getting away from what it doesn't like, right? It cannot come fully to rest. That's why we're here. The ego self cannot come fully to rest. Does anyone not know this from their own experience? Nothing new here. You work hard. You work hard. You realize you need to take a break. It's too much. It's too much. You take a break. Maybe you take some days off from work. Really feels good maybe for a day or two, and then a couple of days into it, what happens? You start to get bored, don't you? There's nothing to do. It's not enough. The too much is now not enough. The ego self cannot come to rest. whether it's busy or not. I trust you have all seen this in your own life. The ego self cannot come fully to rest in itself or in anything else. This is the basis of Buddhism. We try to hold on to ourselves, but we don't even know what that is. So that doesn't help. So maybe, well, let's hold on to somebody else. Well, that works really well, doesn't it, huh? Wait till somebody else decides they want to go somewhere else. Or somebody else looks at your other, huh? Jealousy. Possessiveness. It's not hard to see what the ego self can do, even with love, even with love. How long before that love turns into jealousy or possessiveness? Once the ego self gets in, you know. Am I saying anything mysterious here? I don't think so. You have to see how it is playing out in your life, in your thoughts, in your words, in your actions. What if there was no self you needed to come back to? You give yourself to the practice, maybe you lose that self-identity for a while, and you find yourself in seamless contact with everything. Marvelous. Oh, what if there was no self you needed to come back to? And for the ego self, this can sound very frightening, can it, huh? No, I want to have a place to come back to. But that's precisely your prison, isn't it? Do you need a self-identity to come back to? Do you? Do you? Consider well. What are you coming back to? As it says in Zen, you tie yourself up without a rope. The rope isn't even real, but you manage to tie yourself up with it. And, oh, boy, I'm... We don't need a self-identity, do we? When we go upstairs, we put on our own shoes, don't we? Huh? I don't put on your shoes, and you don't put on my shoes. Do we need a self-identity for that? Huh? Of course not. What if there was no self-identity you needed to come back to? You would be free even from yourself. You would not even be captured by yourself. Free as the wind, with each step, the pure breeze rises. You must realize this for yourself. We give ourselves morning, noon, and night here in this retreat. You may feel like you're banging against the wall of yourself. Three, 4 days later, stirring the soup in your kitchen, maybe, or you may all of a sudden realize, oh. It often comes some days later. It doesn't matter. Don't burn the soup. That self-identity that we so tenaciously, greedily hold on to. That's our prison. And the prison's not out there. The prison is not other people. The prison is not your job, your family, your handicap. No. No. It's what you do with your mind. And if you do it, it can be undone. It will be undone when you realize it is what must be done. That is practice. Please take care in your sitting. To sit properly, I go around sometimes to correct postures. Not sure if I'm supposed to do that with all the COVID rules and regulations. One time I even forgot my mask. I realized afterwards, oh no. I've given no self to 28 people. But the posture is important. If you're sitting off, for example, to one side, maybe you're sitting in half lotus, so naturally the body tends to be a little this way. Or maybe you're sitting a little forward. As we get older, we tend to go forward, our head, our neck. Huh? Take care to see that when you're sitting properly. Because if you sit like this for a long time, it's gonna do damage. It's going to do damage. So make sure when you're sitting for your own body, but that you're sitting properly. You're sitting properly for your own body. Everyone has to figure this out for themselves. Huh? But the ears should be in line with the shoulders, not in front. Huh? The nose in line with the belly button or the navel. Huh? The eyes just naturally falling down a few feet in front of you. You're not looking at or for anything, but just letting the eyes do what they would do. We've already gone through how important the breath is to bring it all together. But see that your body is in the right posture. More important than your legs is your back, for your back to be naturally erect. I find it helpful, for example, to lean down all the way, lean down all the way, and then slowly come up, and you can feel the butt, the backside, press back and down on the cushion. And then as you come up, if you see a little three-month-old baby, they know how to sit. You ever see a little baby sit with a diaper, butt's kind of sticking out, and then it goes up, yeah. It's straight. It's naturally straight. The butt presses down and a little back. And then the back naturally following the curvature of the spine. Huh? Not like this. But not like this either. That's going to hurt. Huh? Naturally. Huh? We'll see by doing it what you need to keep your posture correct. Then, when the time is right, you can just sit through. You find this afternoon, I have 4 or 5 hours. Nobody else is at home, no work. Turn off my cell phone, just sit. Forget the timer. And just sit through, making sure that your body is ready for it. Huh? Again, not the end of the 50 minutes or the hour, but sitting through what remains of yourself. Until it's clear. There is no self you need to come back to. Then sit maybe 10 more minutes just to make sure. And then get up and do what needs to be done. This is, in a sense, how we really begin Zen practice. Then, for the rest of our life, we can continue. The further you go, the deeper it gets. How are you able to manifest this, to bring it to life in the world? This bodhisattva, these four vows that we recite, there's a deep, deep meaning there. It's not just an empty promise. Well, it's impossible, but I'll try my best. No, it has to be made real in the recitation and in our lives. Otherwise, it is just an empty, empty word. Once to sit through to the end of yourself, so there can be no doubt. Then to spend the rest of your life working that out in the world, bringing that to life as you can with your own ability, talent, whatever. Everyone is different. Everyone has to find their way. But we can all be of service to others. This practice never ends. It's essential to get to the end of yourself. But there's also a practice that never ends. Here's where Pop Zen completely misses the boat. They don't understand either. So they say, yes, well, we practice, but practice is endless, and even the Buddha's only halfway there, and da-da-da-da-da. Bunch of bullshit. You have to come to the end of yourself to begin. But once you do that, the endless practice of working it out in the world begins. And that practice should be endless. How could it end? The conditions of the world are always changing. New beings are always being born. There are always conditions of distress and suffering in the world. There always will be. Buddhism is not a utopian dream. But we begin by bringing this delusion to its own end. And then naturally working from there for and as others. Does anyone have a question or concern from out of the practice? Please feel free.
Question about your talk now. When the self is a delusion, a prison, why is it there?
Some people would say we grow as children. We have to develop a kind of a self-identity. So a very small baby, an infant, probably doesn't really have a self yet. You follow? It cries and it gets fed by the mother, but it's not aware that I'm thirsty, so I'll cry. I better cry. It's instinctual, we might say. And it gets fed by the mother, and then it sleeps. But as we grow, we all remember, don't we? Where we got to the age where we could say no. Remember? Usually to your parents, maybe your teacher. No. No. Where did that come from? Before that, there wasn't only yes, there was no yes or no. You follow? That division doesn't exist for a very small child. But eventually, why? How? Well, we have a bunch of psychotherapists and psychologists here. How does the brain, the human self develop and so on, right? But at some point, this undifferentiated infant, gets to the point where it becomes aware of itself. At which point it can then say, no. You follow? It can also say, me, I, you. And very soon, life, then it finds out. Death, good, bad. Why does that develop? Again, some people would say, it has to develop, and yet we must be able to go beyond that. There's a division, a painful division there that self cannot overcome. So as we develop as human beings, the self develops. It grows out of its little self-centeredness, right? In a sense, as a child grows, it grows a self. It both is and has a self. You follow? It doesn't make sense, but that's what happens, isn't it? I am myself and I have a self. What? Yes. And we can't put them together. But in a sense, the whole point of the self-development is for that self to grow out of itself. To, for example, be concerned about its family, its friends, schoolmates, workmates, its country, the world, the environment. You follow? And this is good and well, right? Rather than just a purely self-centered existence, right? But the self cannot leap out of itself, no matter how big it extends its arms. There's still the conflict between itself and what is not itself. And that is not real. It's a delusion. Where do you end and I begin, Ewald? Where do you draw the line? In the middle of the room? At the edge of your body? How can we communicate like this if you're simply you and I'm simply me? So, I would say, in a sense, it's natural, but it is not enough. And there's something in the depths of the human self that calls out to us, right? To go beyond that self. Because we cannot sustain that, can we? We cannot come to rest in that. It has to open up to this, doesn't it? Doesn't it? So why did we have that ego self? Ask the psychologist. What would you say, Ewald? Is it necessary? Is it a perversion somehow of the biological species? Anyway, here it is. What would you say? You by the way, you are a psychotherapist.
Right,
okay, so I bow to you. Tell me. Teach me.
It's a kind of it gives safetyness.
Certainly, as a child grows up,
when there's pain,
needs that kind of, a kind of security, and that's good for the growing child. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And whenever there's pain, it gets more, and that's for me. Then it takes over.
We create, in a sense, perhaps a kind of a self-identity out of that by needing for security, a kind of an armor, as we spoke about the other day. In a sense, that's necessary for the developing self. And in a sense, we also need to be able to say no, to individualize, to realize ourselves. It's not all bad. It's not all bad. But it is not enough, is it? Because it's inherently, it can't inevitably in contradiction. So it goes beyond itself. To me, that's the fulfillment of human life. not the ego self that maybe becomes very caring, yes, does good for the environment, yes, all of that is good, no doubt. But in the depths of our heart, is that enough? When you realize it's not, the path of Zen is open. I'm afraid I didn't really answer your question, but I leave that to those more knowledgeable about it. Would anyone else like to speak up? I think we have about 8 psychologists or therapists here. Why? What is it necessary? Why does the ego self develop?
I'm not a psychologist, but I'd like to pose a question. Self, there are words, terms like self-confidence, and it's a new term which I find rather useful, self-compassion, compassion for myself. And compassion for others. But there seems to be, to me, how my life has been going until now, there seems a difficulty to... other people have needs. Okay, I think they have needs, right? So this is, of course, not the same, but a very, very important distinction. And how can I react to those needs, which are real, and anyway, even if they think they're real, but how can I react with enough self-confidence and with enough self-compassion not to be exploited by, I wouldn't say by them, but by my my idea what they want from me.
Yeah, it's an important distinction, huh? That I would say being without self, you can directly contact, you are in direct contact with the other. The separation is gone. So when they're in pain, you're in pain. Enlightenment. No, I don't have, no. You're open to the pain and the suffering in the world. That veil, division that you create is not there because it's not real. So, yes, the pain of the other is now your pain in a very wonderful way. Because you can then show them, words may not even be necessary, but to reveal that at the bottom of that situation of distress, there is freedom from distress, right there, right there. Even if they're dying of cancer. Right there, they are free of all this ease. And you can only do that, of course, by knowing it for yourself. By knowing it for yourself. But the psychological issue, huh? Their needs and my thought about them, my assumptions about them, perhaps my own needs, right? My own need to help the other. And then it gets kind of complicated, doesn't it? What we call secondary gains, huh? Being compassionate to build up myself. See how compassionate I am? This happens all the time. People get tired of the pain of practice, so they go out and help somebody. Another form of deceit. So that distinction is crucial because we have to be able to respond out of the actual need, the distress, the dis-ease, not our own, right? Our own conception or our own need. It is the need that is there, whether the person needs a loaf of bread or psychological counseling or whatever it may be. But when that wall comes down. We're directly there with the other in their joy and also in their pain. That's why we naturally must learn to be able to respond. And sometimes, what we need to do is nothing. Not step in and interfere. Let them struggle a little more so they can see their way through. That's where the real discernment, clear seeing, is important. Always trying to help can be a hindrance. Every parent knows that, right? Every parent knows. There's a time when you help your child tie the shoe, and there's a time when you say, you need to learn to do it yourself. And let them walk around with untied shoes for a couple of hours, right? Yeah, that's right. That's love as well, isn't it? So that kind of discernment, clear seeing, yeah. It takes time, it takes work to be able to be clear enough so that you're not reacting, you're not bringing in your own needs, but you're able to respond directly to the need of the other. Yeah, it takes work. It's not an easy thing, but that is a part of the practice. That's what I'm talking about when I say going back to the world and the difficulty. Yes, that's the real dojo. And again, it doesn't mean we always do everything we can. Sometimes it means we step back. You follow? We don't get in the way. Because we know they can realize it themselves. You follow? So there's a time to, in effect, be a mirror for the other. Be a mirror for the other. And just let them see. It's okay. It's okay. There's also time to be a 100-foot brick wall. Out of love. Out of compassion. You are a father. Your son is right here practicing. That says a whole lot. You're doing something right. Would anyone else like to speak up? Again, we have a room full of specialists.
another question. We all have made experiences in our past, in our childhood, and so on. And these experiences have influence for our doing and so on. And not always we are conscious, but sometimes we are conscious of that and can be, not always good, it's not always good to influence.
Yes, yes.
If we reach, this all those the wrong expression, if we are with outside, we could do this, the influence, is it still there or not?
Perhaps this relates to Michael's question yesterday, huh? In the heat of the realization, which may take moments, hours, days, weeks, months, in effect, there is no such thing. There is no such thing. There's no that karmic connection is not there.
Okay.
It's not there. It's gone. All of it. But, as a matter of fact, with almost everyone, as we go on in our life, some of those patterns start to come back. That's another important part of this practice. You follow? Again, in that moment, hour, week, month, however long, in the heat of that, no, they're not there. They're not there. They have no place to hold on to. But as we return to the patterns of life. Maybe if we go up to the mountain, stay up there, it's a lot easier. But if we are going to work in the world with and for others, what you will find is sometimes some of those patterns will return. And you have the basis then, because you can be aware of it and not be defensive about it. But you, oh, wait a minute. Simple example. You may remind me of my mother. And so I may start relating to you from my own past experiences of my mother. Well, I'm not in contact with you, Barbara. I'm in contact with something in my own mind. This is not good. This is not good. You follow? So to be aware that that is happening. And then, again, psychology, therapy may be very helpful, depending on how deeply ingrained, how serious it is. But the point is, once the self is let go, you can see that. You can see it. It still may come back. Some of those patterns, they don't, how to say it, in the heat of the awakening, they're gone. That's why the awakening is what it is. You follow? But it also, I wouldn't say it ends, but those patterns can start to work again. That's what we call after awakening practice. It's very important. And many people think, I've had that moment, right? And of course it goes away, but they're always trying to see everything in relation to that moment. Of course it doesn't work. They just create another delusion, another attachment. You follow? It's got to be able to work seamlessly in the world. So, for example, years ago, I didn't want to deal with that stuff, the psychological stuff. I didn't want to deal. I wanted to go for the big bonanza, right? Get the big awakening and then all that other stuff is gone, right? In a sense, that's your question. Well, keep your eye open. If you've really realized no self, you should be able to freely see, oh, wait a minute. This is coming from my past. This is coming from some thing that really hung me up, really troubled me. And now I'm bringing it here. That will not do. It will not do. To be able to humbly see that and work with it, rather than say, no, I'm enlightened now. I can't have that. That must be your delusion, Barbara. You brought it on. You brought my mother up, not me. So we must be able to humbly see when those wheels start working again. There is our dojo, our place of practice.